Chapter 15. A Postpartum Ultimatum. These should have been the happiest days of our lives, and in many ways they were. We had two sons now, a toddler and a newborn, just 17 months apart. The joy they brought us was profound. Yet the darkness that had descended over Jenny while she was on forced bed rest persisted. Some weeks she was fine, cheerfully tackling the challenges of being responsible for two lives completely dependent on her for every need. Other weeks, without warning, she would turn glum and defeated, locked in a blue fog that sometimes would not lift for days. We were both exhausted and sleep-deprived. Patrick was still waking us at least once in the night, and Connor was up several more times, crying to be nursed or changed. Seldom did we get more than 2 hours of uninterrupted sleep at a stretch. Some nights we were like zombies, moving silently past each other with glazed eyes, Jenny to one baby and I to the other. We were up at midnight, and at 2, and at 3:30, and again at 5. Then the sun would rise, and with it, another day, bringing renewed hope and a bone-aching weariness as we began the cycle over again. From down the hall would come Patrick's sweet, cheery, wide-awake voice, "Mama, Dada, Than!" And as much as we tried to will it otherwise, we knew sleep, what there had been of it, was behind us for another day. I began making the coffee stronger and showing up at work with shirts wrinkled and baby spit up on my ties. One morning in my newsroom, I caught the young, attractive editorial assistant staring intently at me. Flattered, I smiled at her. Hey, I might be a dad twice over now, but the women still noticed me. Then she said, "Do you know you have a Barney sticker in your hair?" Complicating the sleep-deprived chaos that was our lives, our new baby had us terribly worried. Already underweight, Connor was unable to keep nourishment down. Jenny would offer him her breast, and he would oblige her, suckling hungrily. Then, in one quick heave, he would throw it all up. Over and over, the routine repeated itself, each time Jenny becoming more frantic. The doctors diagnosed reflux and referred us to a specialist. For 4 long months, we were consumed with worry over him. Jenny was a basket case of fear and stress and frustration, all exacerbated by lack of sleep, as she nursed him nearly nonstop and then watched helpless as he tossed her milk back at her. Her fuse was as short as I had seen it, and the smallest infractions, a cupboard door left open, crumbs on the counter, would set her off. The good news was Jenny never once took out her anxiety on either baby. In fact, she nurtured both of them with almost obsessive care and patience. She poured every ounce of herself into them. The bad news was that she directed her frustration and anger at me, and even more at Marley. She had lost all patience with him. He was squarely in her crosshairs and could do no right. Each transgression, and there continued to be many, pushed Jenny a little closer to the edge. Oblivious, Marley stayed the course with his antics and misdeeds and boundless ebullience. I bought a flowering shrub and planted it in the garden to commemorate Connor's birth. Marley pulled it out by the roots the same day and chewed it into mulch. I finally got around to replacing the ripped porch screen, and Marley, by now quite accustomed to his self-made doggy door, promptly dove through it again. He escaped one day, and when he finally returned, he had a pair of women's panties in his teeth. I didn't want to know. I started covering for him. When he crashed through our small home, the bowl in our china closet, I followed behind him, straightening throw rugs, righting coffee tables, and wiping up the spittle he flung on the walls. Before Jenny discovered them, I would race to vacuum up the wood chips in the garage where he had gouged the door once again. It was into this volatile environment that I walked one evening. I opened the front door to find Jenny beating Marley with her fists. She was crying uncontrollably and flailing wildly at him, more like she was pounding a kettle drum than imposing a beating, landing glancing blows on his back and shoulders and neck. "Why? Why do you wreck everything?" In that instant, I saw what he had done. The couch cushion was gouged open, the fabric shredded, and the stuffing pulled out. Marley didn't try to flee or dodge the blows. He just stood there and took each one without whimper or complaint. "Hey! Hey! Hey!" I shouted, grabbing her wrist. "Come on! Stop! Stop!" She was sobbing and gasping for breath. It was like a stranger was staring back at me. I did not recognize the look in her eyes. "Get him out of here," she said, her voice flat and tinged with a quiet burn. "Get him out of here now." I opened the front door and he bounded outside, and when I turned back to grab his leash off the table, Jenny said, "I mean it. I'm done with that dog. You find him a new home, or I will." She couldn't mean it. She loved this dog. She adored him, despite his laundry list of shortcomings. She was upset. She was stressed to the breaking point. She would reconsider. For the moment, I thought it was best to give her time to cool down. I walked out the door without another word. In the front yard, Marley raced around, his old jolly self. Out in the street, I hooked him to his leash and ordered, "Sit!" He sat. I pulled the choker chain up high on his throat in preparation for our walk. Before I stepped off, I ran my hand over his head and massaged his neck. He flipped his nose in the air and looked up at me, his tongue hanging halfway down his neck. The incident with Jenny appeared to be behind him. Now I hoped it would be behind her as well. Marley and I walked for miles that evening, and when I finally opened the front door, he was exhausted and ready to collapse quietly in the corner. Jenny was feeding Patrick a jar of baby food as she cradled Connor in her lap. She was calm and appeared back to her old self. I unleashed Marley and he took a huge drink, lapping lustily at the water, sloshing little tidal waves over the side of his bowl. I toweled up the floor and stole a glance in Jenny's direction. She appeared unperturbed. Maybe the horrible moment had passed. Maybe she had reconsidered. As I walked past her, Marley close at my heels, she said in a calm, quiet voice without looking at me, "I'm dead serious. I want him out of here."